Welcome to the Keystone Sports Network.
Hello and welcome to the obligatory Keystone crossover show. I'm Jim Galante along with Chris Buccanani. This is a combination of the obligatory Penn State University podcast and the Keystone Sports Network. This is where we'll take a look at a bit of a different aspect of the Penn State football world. Chris and I may not have gotten to in our respective podcasts, so you're going to get a little extra midweek Penn State football talk. Mr. Chris, how you doing, my good friend?
I'm doing pretty well, Jim, in moral victory formation today.
Well, it's funny you mention that because I did want to ask you about that. But first, let me just let our listeners know, remind them that we're alternating the obligatory Keystone crossover show between our two sites. This week, obviously, if you're listening to this, you know this is on the Keystone Sports Network. That means you may have gotten it from our website, SoundCloud, iTunes, Google Play, about anywhere you get your podcasts. And if you don't have that, download our app, just search on Keystone Sports, and you could find us. Chris, why don't you let our listeners know where they'll be able to find the show next week, along with everything else that you provide?
Absolutely. Appreciate it, Jim. You can find the obligatory PSU podcast wherever you get your podcasts from all the usual providers, Apple, Google, Amazon, Spotify, etc. Just start typing in obligatory, and we will pop right up. And you can watch the obligatory PSU pregame show on the weekends, on your television. Check your channel guides. If you're in Pennsylvania, on AT&T Sportsnet Pittsburgh at 3 p.m. on Friday and 9 a.m. on Saturday. And on NBC Sports Philadelphia Plus at 9 p.m. on Friday and 6 a.m. on Saturday.
Okay, Chris, you brought it up. Before we get into our topic of the week, let me ask you about this Penn State-Ohio State game. Which side you on? Are you on team moral victory, or are you on team... A loss is a loss is a loss. That's now three in a row, and the season might be going to hell in a handbasket.
There are no moral victories, Jim, and nevertheless, I will be a hypocrite and tell you I am proudly on team moral victory. I never expect us to beat Ohio State, doubly so when we're out at the Horseshoe. So after we lost last week, I knew we were going to be staring at a three-game losing streak, and I just wanted to see a football team that hadn't given up on their coach and their season, and I did. I thought the Michigan State-Michigan game was as entertaining as I hoped it would be, but it was also illuminating about the limitations of both those teams. And I saw on Saturday night in Columbus a team that I hope didn't peak but is maybe returning to form and gives me hope that at the very best a 10-3 season is on the table for this team. So I'm feeling as good as you can feel after a loss.
And I'm in the same boat, and I think watching that game, we've seen the good Penn State and the bad Penn State, and I've said this, it coincides with the good Sean Clifford versus the bad and or injured Sean Clifford.
Yeah, no
so
question.
If we get that good Sean Clifford the rest of the way, yeah, I don't think there's a team on the schedule they can't beat. But let's go back to this idea of a moral victory against Ohio State. When you're a program like Penn State and you're getting you lose to a team and you call it a moral victory, what does that tell you about that opponent? And Chris, I know you want to talk about that. What does this tell us about Ohio State that as many Penn State fans are just satisfied that they were competitive against them?
So one of the things, Jim, that I think we as Penn State fans, and frankly, I think around the conference and around the country, a lot of people fail to fully appreciate is just how thoroughly dominant versus the rest of the Big Ten Ohio State has been for a very long time. There's a lot of chatter every year around the Ohio State game and plenty in the offseason too about whether or not Penn State and Ohio State can be considered rivals, right? And the Ohio State folks always want to just sort of derisively dismiss the notion that Penn State could be Ohio State's rival. Now, a lot of that is because they're emotionally invested in the rivalry with Michigan, one of these great historic college football rivalries, right? But the way I like to look at it is just to go back to 1993. Because for me, if you're going to talk about Penn State and Ohio State, you've got to view it in the context of since Penn State has been competing as a member of the Big Ten in football, right? So for the purposes of this exercise, I don't care about what happened 100 years ago to set Michigan and Ohio State up as rivals. I just want to look at, since Penn State has come into the Big Ten, this program that we want to measure ourselves against, how do they stack up numerically? And I have three different measures I'm going to give to you, Jim, and I'll be interested to hear your reactions about the success of, you know, programs in general and how Ohio State stacks up against the rest of the conference. Overall record, conference titles, and then how they fare head-to-head against their intra-conference competition. So let's just start with the overall record. Now, I'm going to apologize. I can't give you exact numbers here because I realized my data was not totally updated based on the wonky season last year. But just to give you an idea, the top four programs in the Big Ten in wins since 1993 are Ohio State, number one, Wisconsin, number two, Penn State, number three, Michigan, number four. And it's very close between Penn State and Michigan. Both of them have just north of 240 wins and a little bit over 110 losses since 1993. Wisconsin, a little bit farther ahead than those two programs. They're up over 250. Ohio State has over 300 wins since Penn State joined the conference. So when you think about an 11 or a 12 game season, to have a gap between the top team in the conference and the number two team since 93 of about 45 to 50 wins, you're almost putting Ohio State in a category of one already. Wouldn't you agree?
They've lapped the field.
I'm curious, does that surprise you when you hear it laid out that way, that it's there's that much of a lead?
It's one of those things that you know that they have a solid lead, but for it to be that much over, I say, a relatively short span, because I'm old enough to remember when the controversy was, you know, going into the Big Ten. But yeah, you know, back then, if you would project forward, there's no way in the world you would think that Ohio State would have that kind of lead on a Michigan or on a Penn State.
When you call that a relatively short period of time, we're talking about 28 years, that's totally appropriate in the Big Ten, right? Because when you're thinking about this idea of rivalries, when you've got the oldest athletic conference in the country, or at least in the Power Five, you've got to go back a century plus to be able to have a history with a team that qualifies as a rivalry. And supposedly, when we joined the Big Ten, George Perlis called Joe Paterno and said, "We're so glad you guys are joining because now we're no longer the new kids on the block." Michigan State joined in 1967.
And you know what was what's ironic too with this, Chris, and I don't mean to digress and get off your main topic, is at the time Penn State fans thought they would go into the Big Ten and, if not dominate, at least lead the conference. And with what they did in 94 with that season, it was at Penn State fans, okay, we're now in our rightful place in this league.
Right, right. Well, I'll credit Keith Conlon with the theory that what happened to Penn State and has now happened to Nebraska is that you join the Big Ten and you let the other powers into your recruiting territory, and all of a sudden you start losing head-to-head battles against conference foes that you might have won when you were an independent or a member of the Big 12 in Nebraska's case, and because you saw a drop-off in after about 4 or 5 years in the league with both programs. Okay, so let's talk about conference titles. Again, since 93, I'm going to rattle these off for you, Jim, and the math won't add up, because if you remember in the pre-Big 10 championship era, there were shared conference titles. So these are all teams that can claim a Big Ten title since Penn State joined the Big Ten. So kind of there's a bottom tier where Iowa won two, Illinois won, and Purdue won. Then Michigan State and Northwestern each have three. Michigan and Penn State, again, pretty close in wins. Same number of conference titles with four. Wisconsin, again, in the number two spot, has six. You want to guess how many Big Ten titles Ohio State can claim, outright or shared, since 1993?
All right, let's see. That's 28 years.
Yep.
And just 15?
Real close, 14. 14. Wow. 50% of the time Penn State has spent in the Big Ten, Ohio State has won the title outright or owned a share of it. Now, that does include two of those 4 years Penn State won the title because Penn State had the head-to-head matchup. But if you look at the Ohio – if you look at the Big Ten record books, there will be a little asterisk there that says Ohio State could claim a share of the title. Now, to their credit, they have the self-respect not to do it when they lost the head-to-head with the Nittany Lions. But nevertheless, however you want to take into account the shared title math, I assure you it does not change the picture of Ohio State with an even more commanding lead than they have in overall wins and then the rest of the field all bunched up behind them.
It's amazing the numbers as you present them. And you mentioned, you know, Goon's theory about you get into the conference and then the competitors take over your recruiting territory, come in and cherry pick. I'm not sure that's the case. I think, and maybe I need to look at the numbers a little bit closer, but I have a theory on how Ohio State got where they are along with Alabama and Clemson. But before I give that theory, we're talking Ohio State is this many iterations better than the rest of the conference. Did you also want to talk about how Ohio State compares nationally to the very top there?
Sure. Yeah, what do you got?
Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State. When I think nationally, I think those three programs. Is that fair?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And if you just go back to the college football playoff era, which is seven seasons, which, by the way, matches up with the Big Ten title game with the East-West divisions, Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson have gotten to the playoffs six times, Ohio State four times. As far as actually winning it all, Alabama three times, Clemson twice, Ohio State just once. Those three teams have six out of the seven national championships.
Yep, only teams with multiple playoff appearances and having won it all.
Right, exactly. That's a way to differentiate Oklahoma and
Georgia.
LSU. LSU's been there once and won it. Oklahoma's been there four times and pretty much gotten embarrassed in the semifinals.
Yep.
So I think in that way, if we looked at the ACC and the Southeast Conference over at least that seven-year window, we would see that same differentiation with Alabama and Clemson in their conferences, because those three teams, now I'm saying this even though Clemson now seems to have come down to earth this season, but I wanted to ask you about this theory of mine, which is this era that we've been in over the last 7 years, college football stopped being regional so much. Penn State used to always dominate Pennsylvania, Virginia, New Jersey, New York. Ohio State was all about the state of Ohio. In these last 7 years, I don't know if it's social media, just the national interest in college football. It's a national game now. Mm-hmm. And when you look at those five-star players, the really, really elite players, they're coming that nationally, the state of Washington. Ohio State is getting a couple five-star guys from the state of Washington. Those players from California who might always go to USC, they're now looking to Alabama or Clemson.
Sure.
So when you get those very elite guys, so now they can go anywhere they want. Where are those very best players going to go? Whoever those three top teams were when this is all going on, which is Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and maybe you could throw Oklahoma. They're at least number four, if not part of this grouping. So now, is there a way to stop this cycle where those three teams are just so much better than everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, the self-perpetuating nature of the system with a four-team playoff, I mean, is self-evident, I think. And it's probably not good for the long-term health of the product because people are just going to tire of seeing the same teams over and over again. I don't want to relitigate the question of when or if or how the playoffs are going to expand, but I do think there's an awareness that without getting some more teams in there and opening this thing up a little bit more, they are maybe cutting off their noses to spite their face a little bit, just in terms of creating customer engagement in the product that is college football. So I think that that's going to happen inevitably, in part because of what you just said. When you can leverage your position as one of the top five programs to get, you know, a disproportionate number of the handful of difference making, especially like, let's say, interior defensive linemen, there might only be two or three who can be true game wreckers in the whole country, and they just keep going to the same spots. Like, yeah, that becomes a problem. And maybe it still will be. You'll just have more teams losing in the first and second round, you know, because the number eight team is still going to lose to Alabama versus the number four team. But
at least they could say they made the playoffs. Well, my question then is, and by the way, this week the narrative in the Southeast Conference was about the difference between Georgia and Florida after Georgia just waxed them.
Yeah.
And the conclusion is recruiting is a huge difference. Georgia's, they gave the number of five stars on the field between the two teams, and it was so disproportionate. So it leaves me with the last question. You really established Ohio State is that much better than everybody else in the Big Ten, including Penn State.
I got one more stat for you before you ask me your question, because this to me is the most telling one. Let me throw this one at you real quick.
Go ahead.
Head-to-head wins over the Buckeyes. 28 years, Jim. Now, the season's not over yet. So, Sparty and the Wolverines are still going to get a crack at Ohio State. And, hell, possibly even Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game. It could shake out that way. Here are your top four programs. Well, actually, let me give you the top two programs in wins versus Ohio State. Once again, Penn State and Michigan are tied. You want to guess how many wins since 93?
So that's the 28 years. I'll give each team maybe. So that's a total of 56 games against Ohio State, correct? Around. I'll say they've won 16 times against them.
But both of them together, Penn State and Michigan?
Yeah.
That's right. It's even. Eight wins. So in 28 years of conference membership, Penn State has not been able to get to double-digit wins versus Ohio State. They've won eight times, and no one has gotten close except for their arch-rival Michigan, and they have the exact same number of wins over that time period. So, you know, again, when we get into this question about who's rival, if we just lopped off all the long history and the War of Toledo and all that, Bo and Woody and all that crap, if we started looking from the time when you could reasonably assess Penn State versus Ohio State as a, quote, rivalry, I would say they've played just as many, if not more, consequential games against the Buckeyes than any program in the Big Ten, including Michigan. And just as a note, there are three teams below Michigan and Penn State with their eight wins apiece who have five wins over Ohio State. That's Wisconsin, Michigan State. By the way, Wisconsin did have one tie as well. Wisconsin, Michigan State, and can you guess the third team with five wins over Ohio State, 93 to 2021?
How about Purdue?
You got it. You got it, my man. The Boilermakers, the Giant Killers. Okay, so hit me with your question.
Well, you know, my question, and I looked at the history a little bit more recent. And by the way, those numbers are phenomenal, and it's a great compliment to Ohio State.
Especially if you're an Ohio State fan.
Well, the fact that they've been good for so many years, okay? If you're going back, you know, almost 30
years. Of course, you
can
look at it the other way. And I'm sure there are a lot of Ohio State fans who look at that and say, like, man, we have been so dominant and so good. How do we only have two titles over that whole time period?
Well, I've just go back. Typically, when I do this type of exercise, I go back for the college football playoff era. And in those 7 years, Ohio State's won five of the seven Big Ten titles, right? Penn State, the 1 year they beat Ohio State, they won the Big Ten title. But that's the only win James Franklin has against Ohio State. So over this 7 years, it's Ohio State, six out of seven wins. It's Ohio State, five out of seven Big Ten championships. And in the Ryan Day era, about 3 years, he's 20-0 against the rest of the Big Ten. So the dominance actually is getting more so. And the last question before we wrap this up, what does Penn State have to do? Can Penn State catch them?
In the short term, I think the answer is no. I mean, in the next 3 to 5 years, I think it is unreasonable to expect Penn State to be able to win more than 1 to 2 games versus the Buckeyes. In the mid to long term, there were a lot of moving pieces, and some of it is going to be dictated by what happens with James Franklin in the offseason. But I think that your best hope is that, now granted, these are two ACC programs, but that you see a Florida State or Clemson-style collapse where it does really only take one situation with your coach to take a left turn, you know, with the administration or, you know, off the field or whatever. A couple of bad apple guys get into your program. You miss on an unusually high number of recruits in one class. Maybe some of them are bad locker room guys or whatever. And if the coach loses the team at any point, that can damage you and create a landslide effect that really pulls your program down considerably. I mean, it's just incredible to me what great recruiting Florida State had in the years when Jimbo Fisher was taking that team to the title game and when they won that national title with Jameis Winston and all the momentum off of that and where they are now. I feel like that's kind of the exception that proves the rule, but you never rule it out. You never rule it out. So I guess I'm not giving you a whole lot to work with when I say, like, a catastrophic black swan event is Penn State's best hope.
Well, I look at it, it's the quarterback position. You know, in Clemson, Trevor or Deshaun aren't walking into that door anytime soon.
Yeah,
how
about
it? And I think that's what happened to them. The thing about Ohio State, just to make sure, he's got four top 100 quarterbacks, so he gets to pick and choose out of that group. So we'll see how that all goes going forward. Chris, thanks so much. Some fantastic information. Remember, Keystone Sports this week, the obligatory podcast next week for our show. That's it for today, though. Thank you all for listening, and be sure you join us next week for the obligatory Keystone Crossover Show.
Keystone Sports Network.